Welcome to Greenwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Greenwire was produced by CKUT on traditional Mohawk territory in Montreal, and I'm your host, Cécile Branco. In this edition...
They're rich because we're poor. Austerity is capitalism's ultimate offensive tactic, and we have every intention of resisting it.
I'm the Vice President Advocate at the University of Winnipeg Students Association, and I'm here because I think it's important for students and workers to come together in solidarity.
But first, here are the headlines. On April 24th, the Federal Employment Minister, Jason Kenney, announced an immediate moratorium on temporary foreign worker program within the restaurant industry in response to abuse of the program. This decision has been supported by many unions, but Justicia for Migrant Workers has raised concern that this decision will affect more than tens of thousands of migrant workers, leaving them in more precarious positions. This decision fails to consider migrant workers who are employed in the restaurant industry, migrant workers who would like to leave the food service industry due to exploitative working conditions, and migrant workers whose contracts are close to expiration and would like to find another employment. Justicia went on to say in their press release that without larger structural changes to protect the rights of migrant workers, such as open work permits and proactive enforcement of workplace rights, this moratorium on temporary foreign workers in the food service industry will have far-reaching negative consequences. They also say that we need to strengthen the standards for all workers so that Canadian and migrant workers are not pitted against one another. British Columbia's Advocate for Children and Youth wants changes to the way the government deals with children and care. Right now, roughly 700 children a year age out of foster care in the province when they turn 19. Russ Henry brings us more from CJSF Radio Burnaby.
On April 25th, British Columbia's representative for children and youth released a report on supports available for youth leaving care. The representative, Mary Ellen Turpel-Lafond, publicly released a special report on the supports available to BC youth when they leave care of the provincial government. The report included recommendations on how these supports can be improved.
I want the government of British Columbia to extend foster care to 24 or 25 on a case-by-case basis. I want to do that because young people are, in any home in British Columbia, are not shown to the door at 19 and say, good luck, you're on your own, because they don't make it. In fact, families that do that, the kids end up coming back in their 20s and staying at home, and they don't reach full independence till later. So I would like them to look at a case-by-case basis extending foster care. The young people have to want it, and we need to get them ready for that. And then I want them to look at having a Youth Leaving Care Act, so they actually make a commitment to making sure that's not just the education needs, but the other needs of the 700 kids that age out of care every year, because we're not having the success that we should be having. And I focused a lot on the education sector. A lot of the kids in care are not tracked in school. The last number of years, we've got them tracked. We're paying better attention, but we still have a long way to go.
When asked what the cost to the province would be...
Well, this is the important thing. The report today looks at a recent report by the Conference Board of Canada, where if you actually support the transition of young people in care, you will boost their earning potential, boost your tax base in British Columbia, and save the social costs that we see now of homelessness, hospital admissions. You know, young people are aging out of care without the support, and what are they aging into? The mental health system and the criminal justice system, for some, and the income assistance system. So that's not good. We know we can save money by doing it differently. It's a small cost. It's unwise for British Columbia not to make that investment.
In her release, Mary Ellen also outlined a slew of problems facing youth aging out of care and posed the question of what does it mean to successfully age out. She said she would like to see future and career planning starting grade 6 and spoke about how the social assistance system is out of date and living on social assistance is living far below the poverty line. For the full report, visit rcybc.ca. For Groundwire, I'm Ross Henry, reporting for CJSF Radio in Burnaby.
On Tuesday, April 29th, the Guelph-based migrant worker advocacy group, going by the name of Fuerza Puerza, held their fifth annual May Day potluck dinner at Sheldale Center in Guelph. This year's focus was on the heightened climate of immigration detention and deportation of racialized individuals throughout Turtle Island. speakers for this past Tuesday's potluck dinner, May Day dinner, included Jose Figueroa, a Canadian Salvadorian currently fighting a deportation order in Langley, BC. And Jose was speaking at the dinner via Skype.
I am calling you from Walnut Grove Lutheran Church, where I have been in sanctuary since October last year. Next May 4th will be 7 months that I have been restricted. My freedom has been restricted here. CBSA officers are constantly surveilling the premises. And I cannot leave the church without the risk of being arrested and being put into a detention center. In October 2013, last year, basically, I was forced to make the decision to claim sanctuary into this church. CBSA, despite the fact that there is no basis for their allegations, they wanted me out of Canada because we have been raising awareness on the situation that the immigration provisions, the sections that are being applied, they are being applied to people that have nothing to do with terrorism. The section of the immigration law that they are applying is section 34.1 of the RIPA, which basically states that a permanent resident or a foreign national is inadmissible Canada for security, for being a member of, or having been a member of an organization that there are reasonable grounds to believe is or was a terrorist organization.
That last headline was brought to you by Miracle Guillon from Migrant Mothers Radio at CFRU Radio in Guelph, Ontario. That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Dim ki kote nou soti, dim pou ki sa nou pati. Ou pa ka di map menti, ou pa ka di map menti. Chat konen rat konen barik may arrête la. Men ki jan ap fè, si nou pa ka tande l'histoire nou.
Il a vu le jour dans un monde où son histoire n'existe pas. Il regarde dans les tiroirs, dans les placards, même sur les matelas. À l'école, même chose, le prof ne peut lui répondre. À l'église, Jésus est blanc, le péché est de couleur sombre. Ses émissions préférées lui montrent un peuple avec un sens de l'humour. Il va à la bibliothèque et se gave de célèbres discours. Des paroles lourdes venant de gens qui sont morts jeunes, heurtant des oreilles sourdes et pleines de haine. Et pourtant c'est noir, rêvait d'un meilleur partage des pouvoirs et d'un tas d'autres choses qu'ils n'ont jamais pu voir, comme la fameuse restitution de la dette d'Haïti, alors que la République dominicaine fait de nous des enfants à part.
You just heard Cheval de Troie by Emrical. Now it's time for our feature stories. This year's International Working Class Day, May Day, has a special resonance in Winnipeg. Not only does it come as a time of serious challenges for the labor sector, it marks the 95th anniversary of the Winnipeg General Strike. Winnipeg's CKUW brings us a report from this year's May Day action.
On the late afternoon of Thursday, May 1st, around 150 people gathered in front of Winnipeg City Hall to participate in the annual May Day March. Union members with brightly colored flags, student activists, workers, parents, and children were present to mark the International Working Class Day. The group Food Not Bombs provided delicious meals to participants. It was pleasant weather-wise, with a slight chill in the air. Perfect day for a brisk march through downtown Winnipeg. The event opened with speeches addressing some of the concerns facing the working class in Manitoba today.
Postal workers have taken some serious body blows in the past few years. Mass transformation of delivery and sortation methods in 2010. Draconian return to work legislation with Harper government mandated wage increases. or decreases depending on how you do your math calculations. And winner takes all final binding offer selection in 2011. And now the proposed loss of door-to-door delivery. Someone might forgive postal workers if we laid down right now and gave up. That's certainly not me. Postal workers have come out fighting. Our members have organized to deliver mass messages and information to over 30,000 households in Winnipeg, including the 12,500 that will be first affected by the loss of to-the-door delivery in North Winnipeg. And they are chomping at the bit to hit back harder.
Our next speaker is from Migrante, Manitoba. Diwa Marcelino works with Filipino workers here in the city, and he's going to be talking about the temporary foreign worker program.
We must support our brothers and sisters in the workplace, regardless of where they come from. We must change the conversation about the temporary foreign worker program and direct it towards the policymakers in government who are pitting worker against worker. The real problem is not with McDonald's and how it runs its business, but how our federal government runs its business like McDonald's.
Over the past decade and even longer, there has been a shift towards contract and temporary migration. So where you'd have folks like my parents who came in the 80s, they'd come as permanent residents and citizens, now they're being replaced by temporary workers. So you don't get the same kind of nation-building immigrants who are settling here and taking up some roots and raising their children. Now you have temporary foreign workers who are here just for their labor, and they're working here for 2 to 4 years, after which they're booted out and they can't come back for another 4 years. Some of them have no complaints whatsoever, but the many that we hear from often complain about being worked too much, paying too much debt in terms of their fees when they come here. They pay agents up to $5,000 to $10,000 to secure a minimum wage job. And they talk about not having the opportunity and the freedom to change jobs if they wish. The issue with migrant workers is they cannot simply get up, pack their bags, and go to a different employer. They have to leave their employer, file a new work permit, which takes upwards up to six plus months. And after that, they can then apply for a new job, start working in a new job. So if you're a worker and you can't access the employment insurance program and you have to wait 6 months before you can legally work, it's a very, very tough deterrent for people wishing to complain or change jobs. So the migrant worker is actually quite stuck in that position.
The march finally got started around 6:30 p.m., proceeding down Main Street and making a loop around downtown and back to City Hall, escorted by the familiar marching band known as the Flaming Trolleys.
I'm Pat. This is my son, Keith. I'm a worker. I believe strongly that there's no war but the class war, that we should get out of all these armed confrontations around the world and focus on the oppressions that we're suffering and express solidarity with our fellows around the world.
My name's Peyton Veach. I'm the Vice President Advocate at the University of Winnipeg Students Association. And I'm here because I think it's important for students and workers to come together in solidarity.
Winnipeg boasts a rich labor history, which includes the famous 1919 General Strike. A month-long series of events known as MayWorks will be taking place this month, including a Pete Seeger tribute concert, the launch of a new book on the Winnipeg General Strike, the annual Festival of Mandolins at the Ukrainian Labor Temple, and much, much more. From downtown Winnipeg, this is CKUW's Julian Cooper for Groundwire. Solidarity, eh?
The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated.
That report was recorded and narrated by CKUW's Julian Cooper, with recording assistance from Chuck Girard and technical support from Michael Welsh. We heard from Ben Zorn, president of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers Winnipeg, Diwa Marcelino of Migrant, and voices from the crowd, including the Flaming Trolleys marching band. Miles Howe from the Halifax Media Co-op has been providing extensive coverage of resistance from fracking by LC PocTalk community members. In this feature, he investigates the corruption in the consultation process.
Tracy Broughton, a former longtime public servant with the Saskatchewan provincial government, was involved in developing that province's guidelines on the duty to consult First Nations communities. Bratton has been following the shale gas story in New Brunswick for some time now. We have recently learned that key players in the Assembly of First Nations Chiefs of New Brunswick, the organization taking the lead on First Nations consultations in that province, co-own private consulting firms with siblings of provincial government ministers. We have also learned that the Assembly has been funded by SWN Resources Canada, the very natural gas company it is supposed to be neutrally deciding upon. Consultation by SWN has included bringing representatives of the Assembly on trips to Arkansas, ostensibly to see hydraulic fracturing operations in the works. It has also involved paying off unsuspecting community members who didn't even know they were being part of a consultation process. We caught up with Bratton and spoke to her about the honor of the crown and other consultative misnomers.
Generally speaking, there are a number of places within the duty where government has chosen to put the work of gathering information onto industry. For me, I say that that's leaving a lot of room for industry to operate in ways that don't fulfill the crown's honor and good faith. And for me, personally, I would have difficulty accepting information gathered in a process that, you know, for instance, ceremony. For me, that's crossing the boundary in the whole good faith and honor aspect of things, because some things are just not meant to be written down.
Frank Augustine is a traditional elder from Elsabooktook First Nation. In September 2012, SWN Resources Canada hosted a Mi'kmaq Elders Workshop, which Augustine took part in.
You know, like, if there was any opinion, you know, that we was invited to observe and to do whatever, you know, and to listen, sit down and listen to what they had to say. Before I left, you know, I was given that check, $200 check, and it didn't mean nothing. It was just my attendance, you know, that they wanted, you know. So they brought out this paper and they said, you know, that when you receive this money, you have to sign here saying that, you know, that you got this money. So a lot of people signed it, and my wife even signed it, and I signed it, and it didn't mean nothing because it's only confirming that this piece of paper only said that you got the money. Mm-hmm. About a week, 2 weeks ago, that I heard one of my friends talking about this and elders being tricked into signing that paper, saying that we took that money and just signed the paper saying that they could do anything that they want. If somebody told me, you know, how wrong that was, I wouldn't have taken that check. I would have tore out that check.
Nobody told you at that moment that if you take this check, you're given the okay for them to do testing?
No, nobody. Nobody. Nobody has talked about that.
Aside from protesting at, you know, potential work sites, what would you recommend as a course of action?
Those court cases articulate how to infringe the right. So every time we go to court, we risk always that the courts are going to further articulate how to stomp on, infringe the right, get around the rights, get around actually dealing with the people who are saying, no, we don't want it. I think the Indigenous people of New Brunswick are doing exactly the right thing. If, you know, there's a burden put on the chief to consult with his people. It's the fiduciary. He got the red coat too, and so he has the responsibility to consult his own people. And if it's an entire tribal council, each one of those chiefs have that responsibility as well. And so besides wanting to stand strong at the land, I'd want to make sure that the leaders are doing what they need to by way of that free prior informed consent required of a chief to give to his people or a Métis president to give to his people about how they view that it will infringe title and rights.
You just heard the weather song by Ott. And finally, in Mayday news from Montreal, over 130 people were arrested by police during the annual anti-capitalist Mayday march organized by CLAC, the Anti-Capitalist Convergence. Despite the heavy police repression, several hundred protesters still managed to take the streets in defiance of Montreal's P6 municipal bylaw. P6 imposes fines of $630 to individuals in protests which don't give their march route to police in advance. Last year, on May Day, nearly 500 people were arrested in police cattle. Here is Rich Bonmiel from CLAC speaking about why people were taking to the street in Montreal on May Day.
So for the 6 year running, the Montreal Anti-Capitalist Convergence is organizing a demonstration on May 1st in Montreal for International Workers' Day. This year's theme is resistance to capitalism's ravages, particularly those caused by extractive industries and the financial sector that supports them. The tar sands, open pit mines, pipelines, fracking, and hydrocarbon transportation represent impending ecological catastrophe and immeasurable damage to nature and communities. The current modes of production promise nothing but destruction for generations to come. The capitalist logic of exploiting resources to the point of exhaustion also means millions spend their lives working and falling ill thanks to the horrible working conditions and people literally dying under the burden of factories that collapse or from bullets fired to stem their resistance to the mega projects being imposed on their lands. For these reasons, the CLAC is planning to lead this year's May 1st demonstration to Place Ville-Marie, the ultimate symbolic meeting place of Montreal's colonialist and capitalist elite. Many mining companies have their corporate headquarters at Place Ville-Marie, including Anvil Mining, which owns copper mines in the Congo, Camex, whose operations are based in northern Mexico, and Alcoa, which owns a dozen or so mines across the globe. Alcoa buys electricity from Hydro-Québec at a discount, while the general population is faced with an unjustifiable 4.3% increase in hydro rates that affects, of course, low-income households who tend to live in badly insulated housing in particular. Place Ville-Marie is also home to the corporate headquarters of major banks like RBC, CIBC, and Toronto Dominion, all three heavily invested in fossil fuel extraction. Canadian banks pocketed almost $8.5 billion in profits in the first quarter of 2014 alone, an increase of 11%, and 4 out of 6 of these banks even posted record profits. Meanwhile, families are in debt for up to 163% of their income. In Quebec, 50,000 single-parent families, most of which are dependent on single mothers, have incomes that do not cover even their basic needs. The elderly, people living alone, single mothers, families that live on minimum wage incomes, the unemployed, and those on social assistance are forced to face bare cupboards just to pay their rent and electricity bills. So the so-called public finance crisis is just a pretext to manipulate the public to consent to austerity measures. The money is there. The average annual salary of a Canadian CEO in 2012 was nearly $8 million, over 170 times that of the average worker in Canada. So they're rich because we're poor. Austerity is capitalism's ultimate offensive tactic, and we have every intention of resisting it.
You're fighting against austerity, you're protesting against austerity. Could you talk about what you would be advocating for? What are the alternatives to austerity?
Well, it's harder. It's always harder to tell you, to say in details what would be an alternative solution. What we can say for sure is that we can no longer go on with the capitalist system, with this mode of production, this mode of so-called extraction of wealth and distribution of wealth. It needs to be challenged. It needs to be stopped. We know for sure that this logic of exploitation to exhaustion, to cut down every tree, to fish every fish from the ocean, to pollute every river and poison the air we breathe, we can no longer go on like that. That's a fact. That's something we know now. So why wait another 20 years, 30 years, 50 years before we stop and challenge capitalism and these modes of production? We know it now, so we should stop now, and we should get together in local assemblies or whatever, every means we have at our disposal, to get together and start thinking about a rupture with the system and invent new ways of relating to the world, relating to each other, and relating to the natural world we inhabit, more sustainable ways, so that we can avoid just leaving only devastation to the next generations, because that's what we're heading for right now. It's like, if we destroy everything, there won't be no jobs on a dead planet one generation from now. So it's not just about jobs, and people need to understand that they need to fight back. They need to defend themselves and their communities against the offensive of the capitalist system and the political system that sustain it.
That was Rich Bonneal from CLAC speaking about May Day in Montreal. Thanks to Amélie Philipson from CKUT Radio for that recording. Now it's time for our community radio report. The Avalanche is a monthly disability justice program which has been on the air since 2005 at CKUT Radio in Montreal. Recently, they launched an online fundraising campaign to create Radio History, bringing their radio show to the deaf community. CKUT's Aaron Lakoff has more.
You can listen to the radio.
You can listen to music.
You can listen to news.
You can listen to the Avalanche disability radio program that talks about disability issues.
But deaf people cannot hear the radio.
On April 23rd, the Avalanche at CKUT launched a month-long fundraising campaign on the website Indiegogo.com called Hand Frequencies, ASL on the Radio. The goal of the campaign is to raise $2,500 by May 18th so that the collective can hire an ASL sign language interpreter for their show once a month over 2 years. The project would make an audio-based medium accessible to the deaf community for the first time in radio history by creating video live streams in American Sign Language, a gestural language communicated primarily through the hands and face. According to the Avalanche, ASL is a vital mode of self-expression within the deaf community, constituting its own language and helping to define deaf culture. Members of the show say that including deaf culture in the range of communities that CKUT and the Avalanche serve would lead to a more vibrant broadcasting community, ultimately resulting in a revolutionary translation of mediums. As of May 1st, the campaign had reached 57% of its goal, with just over $1,000 left to raise in the next 3 weeks. To support the Avalanche fundraising campaign, you can visit www.ckut.ca or search for Hand Frequencies at Indiegogo.com. For Grandwire, this is Aaron Lakoff reporting from CKUT in Montreal.
That's it for this edition of Grandwire, produced by CKUT. Music this week was by Emerical and Out. Headlines this week were written by Carly Forbes, Mary Cole Guillon, and Ross Henry. We also thanks Aaron Lakoff, Miles Howe, and the CKUW News Department, and I have been your host, Cecile Branco. Tune in again to hear Grandwire on your local community radio station or download at grandwire.ncra.ca. Grandwire is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.